Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Happy 4th of July, America. And the world, actually, as you may have heard me say before, I think the 4th of July is a day that the world should celebrate, frankly. I think America's legacy in the last 230 years has been that positive, that much of an influence, that much of a beacon of light, the shining light on the hill, as Winthrop and Reagan both said. As you know, every 4th of July, I have some things that I like to say about how we got where we are, what was the run up to where we are today, who did what they did to get us to where we are, so that you and I can have what we have as small business owners and can enjoy the success and the ability, I should say, to pursue our dreams. And I go all the way back to the 12th century. And I talk about this guy. He was the first of many members of the family Plantagenet to be the King of England. Henry II claimed the throne of England after his cousin Stephen died in 1154 AD. Why is this important to small business owners like you and me? Well, Henry II is considered to be the founder of a legal system to which I believe entrepreneurs owe our freedom to be. And the world is a better place as a result of entrepreneurs having such freedom. As ambitious as he was intelligent, Henry's reasonably successful attempt to consolidate all of the British Isles under his rule, which had not been done before, by the way, to consolidate all of the British Isles under his rule, created the need for order. His subsequent government and court reforms, which were intended more for his political expediency than to really empower the people, actually resulted in the emergence of a body of law which replaced elements of the feudal system, like that were some that included some that were enlightened as the trial by ordeal. If you remember that, you've read about that judicial practice, trial by ordeal. Well, this body of law that Henry II created replaced those things. The evolution of this body of law, which became known as English common law, includes the Magna Carta, 1215, the Bail Act, 1444, the Petition of Rights, 1628, the Habeas Corpus Act, 1679, and the English Bill of Rights, 1689, plus many other instruments and declarations which strengthen the rights of individuals and the ownership and enjoyment of property. Over five centuries after the death of Henry II, the legal and cultural tide of personal freedoms and protection of private property for ordinary people caused England's youngest Prime Minister, William Pitt, to summarize the concept of individual rights and property under England's common law this way. This is what he said. The poorest man may, in his cottage, bid defiance to all the forces of the crown. It may be frail, this house. The roof may shake, the wind may blow through it, the storms may enter, the rain may enter, but the King of England cannot enter. All his forces dare not cross the threshold of the ruined tenement. End quote. That is in the middle of the 17th century. That was the attitude of the Prime Minister of England about personal property rights. And by the time Pitt spoke these words, to have been able to say this with impunity in England, let alone actually enjoy such liberty, demonstrated how far the invisible hand of Henry II's reforms had actually progressed. But across the Atlantic, in the colonies, there was a word in Pitt's quote that kept sticking in the craws of a certain group of malcontents, and one that was missing. The word they choked on, king. Remember that? The king of England cannot enter. Remember he said that? These malcontents that I was talking about, that we'll talk about again in a minute, they were choked on that word king. And the word that was missing from Pitt's quote, freedom. In The Fortunes of the Republic, Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, "We began with freedom. America was opened after the feudal mischief was spent. No inquisition here, no kings, no nobles, no dominant church," end quote. Just the kind of world these malcontents, America's founders, envisioned and set about creating sans kings. In The Origin of the Bill of Rights, Leonard W. Levy wrote, "Freedom was mainly a product of the New World," end quote. These conditions, as Thomas Jefferson so ably and famously wrote in the Declaration of Independence, were life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These were 18th century words for freedom and embryonic conditions for which all of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence on this day in 1776, which we celebrate as we speak, which all of these 56 signers put their lives and liberties on the line to give birth to. A decade later, America's Bill of Rights, which became the first 10 amendments of the U.S. Constitution, clearly had its origins in a 100-year-old English document with the same name. If you remember, I mentioned that earlier. But the English Bill of Rights was created in a world that perpetuated the divine right of kings. The American document, holding the New World concept of personal rights and liberty, the New World concept of those things, wasn't perfected to the founder's satisfaction until it perpetuated rights that were, as John Dickinson had declared a decade earlier in 1766, born with us, exist with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives, end quote. Take that, you kings. When we come back after these messages, I want to wrap this up and talk about something else. I want to talk about another war that we're actually fighting right now and my thoughts on that. But before that, we're going to talk about what all this means to entrepreneurs today. And we'll do that right after these messages. It's 20 after. Happy 4th of July, America. Happy 4th of July, world. She was a bebop baby on a hard day's night. She was hanging on Johnny Lee. Was... Don't let your troubles make you cry. Don't waste a moment wondering why. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm talking about some of the things that led up to you and me being able to pursue our entrepreneurial dreams. And I was just quoting John Dickinson, who in 1766 was talking about freedom. And he says it was born with us, it exists with us, and cannot be taken from us by any human power without taking our lives. And that was a shot across the bow of King George. And 200 years after Dickinson said that, philosopher, novelist, and prolific defender of capitalism, Ayn Rand said, "The most profoundly revolutionary achievement of the United States of America was the subordination of society to moral law." To Rand, moral law is made manifest by individual rights. And even though the seed of the American experiment can be found in English common law, Rand still considered the United States to be, quote, the first moral society in history, end quote. In the 1999 Global Entrepreneurial Monitor, a global study on entrepreneurship revealed a direct link between the rate of the new business startups and a country's economic growth. The study also revealed that among many factors that contribute to the entrepreneurship, perhaps the most critical is a set of, this is quote now, is a set of social and cultural values along with appropriate social and economic and political institutions that legitimize and encourage the pursuit of entrepreneurial opportunity. I'm going to read that again. This is from the Global Entrepreneurial Monitor. It revealed that some of the key factors in you and me having the ability to be entrepreneurs and to pursue our dreams is a set of social and cultural values along with social, economic, and political institutions that legitimize and encourage the pursuit of entrepreneurial opportunities. Freedom, ladies and gentlemen, that's what he's talking about. That's what the man who wrote that's talking about. In countries, and it was a man, by the way, I think we'll mention his name in a minute, Paul Reynolds, actually, is the guy's name who said that. In countries ranking high in the studies in the Global Entrepreneurial Monitor's analysis, entrepreneurship is an integral and accepted feature of economic and personal life. It's part of the culture. Of the 10 industrialized nations studied, the United States ranked number one in terms of entrepreneurship. And Paul Reynolds, the gentleman I just quoted, said this again. Conclusive evidence, this is conclusive evidence, that promoting entrepreneurship and enhancing the entrepreneurial dynamic of a country should be an integral element of any government's commitment to boosting economic well-being. Freedom. Entrepreneurs, by definition, take risks. Without the freedom to own and to enjoy the fruits of such risks, why take them? Thank you, Henry II. You started all this. And thank you, founders. Without your vision, courage, passion, and sacrifice, plus all who rallied to your cry to give birth to the new world definition of freedom, it's doubtful that entrepreneurship as we know it would exist. And if capitalism is the economic lever of democracy, entrepreneurship is the force that renews that strength and reliability of that lever for each new generation. We began with freedom. Freedom to dream and to try. Freedom to succeed and to fail. Freedom to own and to enjoy. Freedom to accumulate and to pass on to the next generation. We began with freedom and entrepreneurship was born. We began with freedom and capitalism was made to flourish. We began with freedom and the world, in my opinion, is the better for it. Folks, we are now in another war. We've won the Revolutionary War, thank God, thanks to a lot of hard work by a lot of people and a lot of sacrifice. We're now in another war. We're in a war against terrorism. And there are some things that I believe that we should think about this war on terrorism. And I've come up with actually with 10 things I'm going to list for you here. All people who are free or who want to be, regardless of where they live on planet Earth, in my opinion, are in a global war against radical Islamic terrorists. Number two, the war on terror has no front lines, rear areas, demilitarized zones, or safe harbors. Number three, the war on terror is not about oil or Israel. The goal of the terrorists is global domination by radical Islam, which would take civilization back to the first century, the first millennium, I should say, A.D. The terrorists will never employ or respond to diplomacy or negotiations. They will kill and create chaos until they win or until we kill them. Success in the war on terror will not come to the naive, the passive, or the squeamish. That's number five. Number six, mistakes have been made in dealing with terrorists by many governments and their leaders for many years. More mistakes will be made. Number seven, the enemy is the terrorists, not those who make mistakes trying to fight them. Number eight, by themselves, terrorists cannot defeat us. They can only diminish our resolve and cause us to defeat ourselves. Number nine, the future of the free world is at stake. And number 10, it's absolutely possible that we could lose the war on terror. I think that decision is up to us. 29 after. Happy 4th of July. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll be right back with Ken Davis. He's the guy who wrote the book, Don't Know Much About History.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.